Bechtel conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. Please note that this call is being recorded. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn it over to Melanie Carpenter of iAdvise Corporate Communications. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Jennifer. Good morning, everybody. Today, Arca Continental will discuss its results for the first quarter of 2016. The earnings release went out this morning, and the long version is now available on the company website, arcacontal.com, in the investor relations section. We also have an audio webcast, and that will be available for replay on the website. It's now my pleasure to introduce our speakers. Joining us today from Monterrey are Mr. Arturo Gutierrez, Chief Operating Officer, Mr. Emilio Marcos, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Manuel Gutierrez, Director of Corporate Planning, as well as the Investor Relations team. And with that, it's my pleasure to turn the call over to Arturo Gutierrez, who will begin the company's presentation. So please go ahead, Arturo.
Thank you, Melanie, and good morning, everyone. I appreciate you joining us today for an update on our first quarter performance. I will begin with an overview of our consolidated results and operating highlights, and then Emilio will take you through more details on the financial results. Before we review this quarter's operating results, I would like to take a moment to address recent events in Ecuador in light of last week's tragic earthquake. We are deeply saddened by this tragedy, and our thoughts and prayers are with those affected. I also would like to acknowledge and sincerely recognize our team in Ecuador for their tireless efforts in helping to ensure the health and safety of our associates and the people of Ecuador during this time of crisis. They have been at the very forefront of our efforts to assist with immediate disaster relief. Together, Arca Continental and the Coca-Cola Company were the first companies to support the affected areas with product, and we have secured a considerable donation. Furthermore, commercial advertising of all Coca-Cola brands will be put on hold. Any committed advertising investment will be directed towards relief and rebuilding efforts in Ecuador. Turning now to our operations, we are very pleased with our first quarter performance. Once again, we continued improving our earnings momentum, posting solid gains both at the top and at especially the bottom line, despite still significant macroeconomic volatility. Total consolidated volume grew 37% in the quarter to reach 409 million unit cases, while total revenues increased 39%, reaching record sales of 21.3 billion pesos. Our consolidated EBITDA in the quarter increased close to 45%, making this the 20th consecutive quarter of EBITDA growth since the merger of Arca Continental. Notably, this is the highest EBITDA margin in the first quarter since 2008. Our initiatives to perfect our execution capabilities at the point of sale are yielding results. Evidence of our commitment to continuous innovation is the development and full rollout of the Arca Continental Total Execution Model, which seeks to strengthen our strategic capabilities from a standardized platform of excellence. The investments we have made to optimize our production and distribution facilities, innovate more effectively, and operate more efficiently by leveraging our scale and portfolio are all paying off. In another significant milestone, Arca Continental is celebrating its 90th anniversary as a Coca-Cola bottler in Mexico. As pioneers in the system, we look back on our journey with pride. We have worked with the Coca-Cola Company through 9 decades of successful relations, mutual support, and trust. Moving now to our operating groups, I will further expand on the results across our geographies and operations, beginning with North America. We are pleased to report that volume in Mexico continues to improve. Volume in the first quarter, not including jug water, grew 12.2%, driven by favorable weather and solid growth across all categories. Personal water and still beverages were both up 21%, while jug water volume grew 8.3%, confirming our position as the leading brand in our territories. Powerade continued its sequential growth trend, up 43% of the quarter, driven by greater product coverage and by Powerade Zero. Salix Premium, our flavored water brand, also grew double-digit in the quarter. And we also experienced exceptional growth across several distribution channels, including at work, leisure, supermarkets, and traditional. So overall, in the first quarter, we had many concrete examples of how we are winning at the point of sale. As a result, North America's net revenues increased 16.3% in the first quarter to reach 12.1 billion pesos. Average price in our beverage business in Mexico, not including jug water, rose 3.8%, reaching 50.31 pesos per unit case, sustained by our flexible price pack architecture, revenue management, and affordability strategies. In the first quarter, EBITDA in North America rose 19.6% to 2.5 billion pesos, representing a margin of 20.5% and expansion of 60 basis points. We captured additional non-alcoholic ready-to-drink beverage volume and value share in Mexico as a result of our team's ability to execute clear location-based channel strategies across all beverage categories. Topo Chico Mineral Water continued expanding its preference in the U.S. marketplace. Export sales rose 21% in the quarter, driven by solid execution and attractive market activations in major music festivals and venues, such as the Bumbershoot Music and Arts Festival in Seattle and the Greek Theater in Los Angeles. Moreover, Topo Chico announced last month its partnership with global golf entertainment leader Topgolf, confirming its market position as the number one imported mineral water brand in convenience and grocery stores in South Central Texas. We also continue advancing our Santa Clara dairy business, particularly flavored milk, which grew at double-digit rates, leveraging our strength in the traditional and at-home channels. Our vending machine business kept making steady progress both in beverages and in snacks. Sales increased double digits in the first quarter, achieving six consecutive quarters of growth. We will continue investing in new information technology tools to expand remote unit management, maintenance, and overall administration capabilities. These results validate our commitment to remain focused on our long-term strategies and continue investing in our markets, as we have consistently done over the years. Let me now turn to our snack business, consisting of Bocados in Mexico, Wise Foods in the U.S., and Inalexa in Ecuador. Our operations achieved very good organic top-line results in the quarter. Bocados reaffirmed its sequential growth trend in Mexico, delivering high single-digit sales growth as we continued perfecting our point-of-sale execution through improved capabilities and processes. We're capturing additional market share, particularly in the extruded snacks category, as a result of expanded coverage and product innovation, moving Bocados closer to our goal of becoming a national brand. Wise, our snack business in the U.S., posted low single-digit sales growth as we focus on innovating our product portfolio and refreshing our brands to attract new consumers. The popcorn category continues its positive trend driven by growth from new products like reduced fat, sea salt, and cinnamon roll flavor. Wise teamed up with Focus Brands to bring the world-famous flavor of Cinnabon into our popcorn. Our Cheese Doodles brand of puffed cheese also introduced new and innovative product mixes. Our new plant in Fort Worth, Texas is fully operational. We have started manufacturing Wise and Si Señor potato chips, adding capacity while lowering production costs to better serve the Texas and Mexican markets. Wise continued its long-standing relationship with the New York Mets by renewing the sponsorship for five more years to be the official potato chip and cheese puff of this iconic baseball team. Finally, Inalexa, our snack business in Ecuador, delivered another quarter of single-digit revenue growth driven by new product launches. One example is Gazpachitos, a new corn-extruded snack that after a successful launch is rapidly gaining market share. We're actively expanding the sweet pastry category with more affordable presentations, which have been well received by our consumers. We're taking advantage of key tie-in opportunities with Coca-Cola and Pony products to offer attractive cross-promotions in the traditional and modern trade channels. In fact, for the second year in a row, the leading retailer Super Maxi named Inalexa the best supplier in snacks and bakery category. Moving now to our operations in South America, which include our business in Argentina, Ecuador, and Peru. Volume was up 114.8% in the first quarter, driven by growth in Ecuador and Peru, which was partially offset by volume declines in Argentina. Total revenue for South America rose 89% in the first quarter, reaching 9.1 billion pesos. EBITDA in the first quarter rose 104% to 1.8 billion pesos, representing a margin of 19.6%. We recently communicated to the market our intention to increase our current 75% stake in our subsidiaries in Argentina and Ecuador to reach 100%. We are looking to streamline our operation and optimize decision-making in those countries. Emilio will provide further details on how we will structure this transaction. During our last earnings call, we shared our concern Argentina's ongoing economic transition would have an adverse short-term impact on our industry and on our business. Since then, we have seen disposable consumer spending remain quite challenged. However, the economy is expected to speed up in the medium term amid an improvement in the external sector and the country's return to international credit markets. Volume in Argentina declined 5.9% in the quarter as consumers continued to be impacted by currency volatility and high inflation. Despite these challenges, we are working on all fronts to drive performance and share gains. We continued investing in market-focused initiatives to enhance our execution at the point of sale and improve cooler coverage from 48% to 55%, the proven way to boost sales. While we expect the macroeconomic conditions to remain difficult in Argentina throughout 2016, we are encouraged by our performance in this market and the country's positive outlook. This was restated with a recent announcement to integrate vertically to sugar production. A couple of weeks ago, we announced the acquisition of sugar production assets in the province of Tucumán. This transaction will allow us to improve our local sourcing capabilities of a key input by giving us access to approximately 100,000 tons of sugar at a competitive cost. Moving on to Ecuador, our beverage business posted a 1.2% volume growth in the first quarter after a strong 4.4% growth in the same quarter of last year, driven by a strong performance in still beverages, up 13%. Our team worked diligently to launch product alternatives that are in line with the prevailing situation in the market due to the current recession in the Ecuadorian economy. As in other cases where we have experienced economic slowdowns, we have reinforced our revenue management strategies, actively working to offer consumers attractive price package combinations and ensure affordability tied to key price points. We launched Coca-Cola 355 ml PET at an accessible 35 cents price point and included a 125 ml Tetra package nectar at a 25 cent price point, ensuring our product availability in our most price-sensitive market segment. We also started the year joining the worldwide launch of our Taste the Feeling campaign. This is the first new global marketing campaign in 7 years, which unites all Coke brands under a single creative image and celebrates the idea that drinking a Coca-Cola, any Coca-Cola, is a simple pleasure that makes everyday moments special. It also underscores our commitment to choice, offering consumers whichever Coca-Cola suits their taste, lifestyle, and diet. Lastly, Tonicorp, our value-added dairy company jointly owned with the Coca-Cola company, delivered positive results in the first quarter. Net revenues rose low single digits, driven by growth in the flavored milk and oatmeal beverage categories. We continued expanding market share in the growing value-added dairy categories such as yogurt, flavored milk, and oatmeal. We accelerated our innovation pipeline, entering new value-added dairy categories focused on product functionality and price point accessibility. We launched Yorbete, a nutritional yogurt, in a 120-gram package at an attractive 35-cent price point. We're moving ahead with construction of our new state-of-the-art plant that should start operations by mid-year. These investments underscore the long-term opportunity we envision in developing our portfolio of brands in Ecuador. Let me close our operations review with Peru. We are encouraged by the prospect of our operation in this country. Volume in the first quarter grew a strong 8.3%, reaching 85.7 million unit cases, driven by better execution at the point of sale and growth in water and still beverage categories up 18.2% and 10.7% respectively. Domestic demand has been the main driver of growth as an overall improvement in consumer confidence has boosted consumption and investment. Net revenues rose 17.4% in the quarter due to our enhanced capabilities to selectively execute price increases and effectively manage discounts and promotions across our territories. Average price per unit case increased 8.5% in the first quarter. We continued investing in market-focused initiatives to support our sparkling beverage platform, enhancing our execution at the point of sale, bolstering our returnable base, and improving our cooler coverage. This quarter, we deployed an aggressive plan to introduce close to 10,000 coolers nationwide, expanding coverage from 26.6% to 28%, thus ensuring higher cold beverage availability. I will now turn the call to Emilio to provide you with more details on our financial results.
Thank you, Arturo. Good morning, everyone, and thank you again for joining us today. We began the year with renewed energy and enthusiasm. Our results for the first quarter show a positive momentum with a good consumption trend, adequate product portfolio, excellence in execution, and well-managed cost and expense structure to achieve our outstanding profitability level and cash flow generation for the quarter. Of course, we recognize that we have challenges ahead, but as always, we see them as opportunities to capitalize in our operations and best practices. We continue implementing revenue growth management initiatives, enhancing service models in order to find new value creation avenues in Peru, leveraging our new scale in South America. Consolidated revenues in the first quarter increased close to 40% and 14% without Peru. Thanks to our RGM capabilities and the strong volume growth in Mexico and Peru, driven by a better consumption environment and higher disposable income from the consumer. Comparable currency neutral net revenues without Peru increased 15.1% in the quarter. In North America, revenue grew 16.3% in the quarter, thanks to strong volume growth and a better price per unit case. This same line in South America increased 90% in the first quarter. Excluding Peru, sales in South America were up 9%. As a result of a higher exchange rate that impacted our dollar-based raw materials and the integration of Peru, gross margin reported in the quarter was 46.6% versus 48%, which is 140 basis points lower. Without Peru, gross margin was 48.2%, a 20 basis point expansion. Thanks to the notable top-line growth and an effective expense control program, SG&A as a percentage of sales were 31.7% in the quarter, 180 basis points lower versus first quarter of last year. Our focus remains on investing in marketing initiatives and campaigns that reinforce our connection with the consumer. Our operating income for the quarter increased 43%, with a margin of 14.9%, 40 basis points higher than 2015, reaching 3.2 billion pesos. Consolidated EBITDA rose to 4.3 billion pesos, increasing 45% for a margin of 20.1%, up 70 basis points, which was the highest first quarter margin in the last 8 years. On a currency-neutral comparative basis, EBITDA increased 18.8% in the first quarter without Peru. Income tax provision increased to 942 million pesos, 50% more than last year, impacted mainly by the integration of Peru. Effective tax rate for the quarter was 30.5%, in line with last year. In terms of comprehensive custom financing, our higher interest expense comes from a higher debt position at the beginning of the year. This was partially offset by an exchange rate gain, which resulted from a stronger peso and our actions to mitigate the U.S. dollar exposure. This line registered 130 million pesos from 220 million pesos in the first quarter of 2015. Moving to net income, we reported an increase of 44% to reach 1.9 billion pesos in the quarter for a margin of 8.8%, 30 basis points higher versus last year. As of March, our balance sheet reflected a cash position of 8.1 billion pesos, a total debt of 32.1 billion pesos, for a net debt to EBITDA coverage ratio of 1.3 times, coming from 1.7 times in December, a clear reflection of our commitment to deleverage and maintaining our strong balance sheet. We're in good track to reach a ratio of around 1.1 times by the end of the year to post an even healthier financial position. In the first 3 months of the year, our operating cash flow reached 3.5 billion pesos, showing the company's ability to generate positive inflows. Total capital investments planned for the year are nearly 7 billion pesos, primarily to fortify market execution and increase production capacity in Ecuador and Argentina. As Arturo mentioned, we recently announced an agreement to increase our current stake in Argentina and Ecuador divisions from 75% to 100% through an issuance of around 88 million shares, AC shares. We look forward to consolidate operations to optimize decision-making and streamline our corporate structure. This corporate restructure is subject to customary corporate and regulatory approvals. Final closing for the transaction is expected to take place by the end of this year. We have a challenging 2016, particularly in South America, but we have already implemented the right strategies to reduce the impact and excel in our execution in order to continue delivering good results and creating value. And with that, I'll turn it back to Arturo.
Thank you, Emilio. As we look back over our recent history, we find ourselves operating in a challenging, fast-evolving global environment, with some economies slowing, other economies stabilizing, and still others improving and well on their way to recovery. In all cases, we remain optimistic for the long term and focused on investing through difficult times to drive competitive advantage with excellent results to date. We have a clear roadmap for growth and a productivity program that is driving efficiencies. This strong alignment has not only enabled us to effectively navigate the volatility of these past several years, it has also put us in a position of real strength. I want to express our gratitude for the support and trust of the Coca-Cola Company for their continued trust and support for over 90 years. As we look ahead for the remainder of 2016, we are convinced that our business model has become a solid platform for our development and growth. In everything we do, we focus on continuing to be the number one option for our customers and consumers, allowing us to find and leverage new growth opportunities in the countries and segments we serve. Thank you for your support and confidence. Operator, you can now please open the call for questions.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key, followed by the one key on your touch-tone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. If you wish to remove yourself from the questioning queue, you may do so by dialing star 2. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. Our first question comes from Alex Robarts with Citigroup.
Thanks, everybody, and hello. I wanted to, first of all, start in Mexico. I mean, double-digit volume growth is an important achievement here in Mexico volumes. And, you know, a key driver are the waters and stills. Can you talk about, you know, this 20% growth in water and steel volume in North America, to the extent that we saw incremental demand, the impact of the direct home channel that you talk about, and finally, how do you think about the two segments, water and stills, for the rest of the year? That's the first question. Thank you.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for your question. Good to talk to you. Well, yes, certainly the first quarter has been exceptional for us, and especially for the stills business in Mexico. Those categories provided 21% of the total beverage growth, and they represent probably around 10 or 11%. But all categories performed well, and it is important to say that we had a combination of obviously a good environment and weather and other positive conditions for growth, but we certainly took advantage of those with better execution and rolling out our plans during the quarter. Let me just address a few of the categories that are the most important. In the case of juices and the Valle brand, we developed our strategic package coverage. We include those in what we have explained as our part of our ACT model and our fundamentals, where we know that there is a combination of packages that win in the market. And we've done that with the SSDs in the past. Now we've rolled out into stills with very favorable results. In the case of juices and nectars, we had the combination of the entry and frequency segments, and brand availability grew throughout the quarter, which is an important metric to know if we're doing our part of the job. Same thing with Valle Fruit, the orange fruit drink. It grew an impressive 23%. And also the coexistence in that case of single serve and multi-serve is the winning combination. In the case of Ciel water, purified water, we also leveraged the growth of some of the core packages. We included the 1 liter and the 1.5 as what we call those that are unforgivable to have in the market. And that combination gave us significant growth throughout the quarter. Same thing as the launch of Ciel Extreme, the flavored water. It grew 84%. We already had this category, but it improved the product and flavor. We've been gaining market share, and we added an additional SKU of that category also to our key SKU portfolio. And we basically also gained market share in all the relevant categories. In stills, we gained market share in water, we did in juices, and sports drinks. And Powerade, I think it continues to be the best example of what we can do with a strong brand and with better execution in the market. We continue with a positive trend. Powerade grew 43% in the quarter. It's been a major driver for growth for us, and Powerade Zero was an important launch for that purpose. We also regained growth in Fuse Tea, which was a category that had been challenged in recent times. And finally, Santa Clara, which is a very important category, still not a relevant part of the mix, but continues to provide growth and to prove that it's a winning product in the market, especially the flavored milk, which is already reaching, relevant shares of market in Monterrey and Guadalajara, which is places where it has more reach. So I think it's a solid quarter for sales, but it comes to prove that these are the categories that are less developed and provide further opportunity for growth in Mexico. But, you know, having said that, we also grew significantly in SSDs, which also, again, breaks that old idea that, you know, we've reached the limit in Mexico. We can continue to grow both in sparkling and stills.
Got it. Thank you. Now, that's helpful. I wanted to turn to Peru. I mean, this is, the newest addition in the country portfolio. And frankly, we have backed out a margin that seems to show above 21%. A 300 basis point expansion year on year, and I guess when we think about your rate of synergy capture and the fact that Peru is probably leading Latin America just generally in GDP growth this year, do you think how are you feeling on the $25 million that you unveiled for us late last year as the target for synergies this year, and is there upside risk and kind of to that number also going forward into next year? Thank you.
Yes, with regards to Peru, we also had a very good first quarter. We certainly had, as in Mexico, good conditions overall. We had an economy that maintains healthy growth, and we have high domestic demand, no doubt. Our volume, as you saw, grew more than 8%. We had positive weather, but we improved our execution, that's no doubt, in the point of sale. And we have to consider that volume in light of an increase in prices, a significant increase in prices by the end of last year, in December 2015. So I think we overall took a very good advantage of the positive environment with better performance in the market. And some of the actions from our synergy plan have started to take effect, mostly on the revenue side, I would say. And that's also reflected in growth for the quarter. We've been aggressive in cold equipment introduction, as I explained. We've increased our coverage now to 28%. As in Mexico, we have identified also the main SKUs and increased sales coverage significantly from the last quarter in those that we consider to be the winning SKUs in the market. We have a better management of discounts. That was also part of the synergy plan in terms of revenue synergies, and even better management of commercial discounts with wholesalers. And we continue our strategy behind refillable packs with communication, with bottle seating. I implemented launches of new flavors and, you know, promotions, back-to-school promotions, and a number of things. But I think at this point, in terms of the synergies, we're comfortable and confident with our expected running rate synergies of $25 million for the year by the end of 2016. And we expect that number to be increased with additional initiatives to come into effect next year. So our plan is underway. The initiatives are moving forward. Some are already reflected, mostly on the revenue side, as I mentioned. But it's a good thing that we have many initiatives that have either been implemented and the positive impact is not fully reflected, or that are yet to be implemented. So I think this is a good trend in Peru that is meant to continue. I don't know if that's satisfying.
Yeah. Okay. Very helpful. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lauren Torres with UBS.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, everyone. Just first, a quick follow-up on your comments on volumes. Like, I heard you call the quarter exceptional growth, which it was, and I was curious, you know, as we get to tougher comps, I guess, in the second half, and I think last quarter you provided consolidated volume growth of 3%. So I was just curious in the scheme of things, thinking about full-year growth and how to think about Mexico in the realm of total volume growth, if that 3% number is still a good number. And if I could throw out my second question, too, on CapEx, it does seem you're getting more aggressive, and you touched upon some broad components of that. If you could just talk a little bit more about, you know, where that incremental spend is going, and kind of what the opportunity is there once you roll that investment spend out. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Laura. I'll go directly to the first question and let Emilio address the second part. In connection with Mexico, we had a combination of things in the first quarter. We had easier comps. Everybody knows that. We have good weather. We had, you know, a good economic environment in general. And we had better execution and, you know, better overall performance in the market. Even the leap year also was a positive thing in this first quarter. Economic environment in Mexico has improved. And we see that with the growth of, you know, the on-premise channel, the leisure type of consumption growing at a higher rate than the total, at work grow significantly, but all channels are supporting growth. We see employment that continues to recover, rising remittances from the U.S., probably at maybe 40% growth rate in pesos due to the devaluation, and we see lower inflation, which translates into wages that are rising in real terms. So that also is reflected in retail sales. Combined effect of all of that is that retail sales have been gradually improving for several months now across all relevant categories. But as I was saying, we feel that we have taken advantage of these favorable conditions. We have better execution. We're rolling out our ACT model. We're focusing on what we call the fundamentals, which is coverage of key SKUs, cooler expansion and strategy, reduction in out-of-stocks, effective customer visits and other route to market metrics, all of those indicators are better this quarter, we can tell you that. And that proves that Mexico is still, as I was telling Alex, still has potential for further growth. We have introduced coolers, we have introduced racks, we have added customers to our base of modernization to our Century 21, and we have introduced returnable bottles. We have done many things that when the environment is better, we certainly are, you know, taking more advantage of that. And though the first quarter was great, it is early to anticipate full results. Overall, as guidance for volume in the company, we're remaining the same. We will wait for the second half of the year before we make any adjustments to our guidance. I would say that most likely volumes for the year in Mexico would be better than originally expected. But the same as we do when we have a negative quarter, we are not adjusting that guidance at this time.
Okay.
So if that answers your question, I can pass it on to Amelia.
Thank you. Hello, Lauren. Thank you for your question. Yes, you're right. Our CapEx this year, the amount that I just said of $7 billion, is a little bit higher than as a percentage of sales that the one that we, the average that we have in the past of around 6 to 7%. This time it's a little bit lower than 8%. It's 7.9, maybe between 7.5 and 8%. Because we, as also Arturo mentioned, we have plans under development in South America, so that includes those investments. So the one in Argentina, the Aurora, that we were finishing this year, the La Aurora of Tonicorp in Ecuador. And 60% again of the CapEx is for maintenance, and part of that is going to be for snacks. So far we have invested $1.5 billion this quarter. It's around 20% of the total. So, but after these three facilities, we will go back around to the 6% that we usually have.
Okay, thank you. And can I, if I could just ask one more quick question, and it may be a quick answer to the question, but we heard this week from the Coca-Cola company about granting more letters of intent or agreements on the refranchising of the U.S. So, you know, once again, just curious on your perspective on the U.S. opportunity.
Yes, we've seen the announcements from the Coca-Cola company, and their idea is to, you know, accelerate the process and finalize refranchising of CCR territories in the U.S., I understand, by the end of 2017. And as we've said before, we see that as a strategic opportunity for us, particularly in those territories that are close and adjacent to our own territories in Mexico. And in that regard, we have been very clear and specific about the regions that we're interested in, growing as a Coke bottler in the region and in the Americas. And we believe that there are many factors that make us as a company a viable option to create value in the market, because we understand that Coca-Cola company is basically searching for partners that would be the best operators of each of the franchises that they're transferring to other bottlers. And we have, on the one hand, the scale, which is more relevant now in our system than it was in the past, and we have a proven track record of success and best-in-class commercial and supply chain capabilities. The proximity to the U.S. also allows us to attain synergies, and we have proven that we've been operating successfully in the U.S., even in beverages with Topo Chico, for over 20 years. I think at this point we have a great relationship with Coca-Cola Company. We have a prevailing collaboration, very strong collaboration in all territories in which we participate. And we've had preliminary approaches, conversations with them, mostly to understand the model for refranchising in the U.S. and its similarities and also the differences that it has with the models that we're familiar with in Mexico and Latin America. We don't have a commitment. There's no commitment on either side at this point, but we're certainly analyzing that possibility.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Isabella Simonato with Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Thank you. Thank you, Arturo, for the question. Regarding Mexico, if you're looking back to the 9% growth at CSTs more specifically, I understand you are revisiting the guidance for the year, but if you could, how can we extrapolate that for the next quarters and how much was driven, you think, by weather in this quarter rather than a better consumption environment overall? That's the first question. And in Peru, we already saw two consecutive quarters with margins well above your previous guidance, around 18%. If we could also think that could be a sustainable level for the remainder of 2016. Thank you.
Thank you, Isabella. In connection with Mexico, as I explained, I believe, and we all know it's a combination. The volume that we've seen in the quarter is exceptional, but we are confident of our ability to continue growing and to continue capturing opportunities in all the categories. If we see Mexico, we would think about a combination of a few factors. One is the comps that we had. We had a tough first quarter of the year last year. We had, as I mentioned, favorable weather in terms of temperature and less rain. We have this positive economic environment. We have all the market indicators that certainly are the ones that are to remain. And also there is the situation of pricing and the pricing environment. Some of the price gaps that we had last year were reduced. And that also helps us in terms of volume. It comes to prove that our brands are stronger, that we have strong equity in our brands, and that, you know, smaller price gaps cannot be sustained by competitors. So what we're doing right now is we're working, because this is such a good question if you want to go into detail and work out, you know, more concrete numbers and percentages. We're working and advancing our analytics capabilities in terms of the big data in the market. And we're building models to understand how much of this is based on which of the elements and which of the, even of the elements of execution in the market makes more sense to continue doing and which others are not as relevant for driving volume. And that optimizes our market spend as well. And we are in the process of maturing that model. We have a model that explains probably 90% based on advanced analytics at this point. And those are the variables that come into play. Certainly, the current economic situation is more important probably than weather. But the coverage of key SKUs is also a key factor. And our execution elements are also very important. So we divide, the elements in the market in the external ones, the ones that are related to operations and depend on the day-to-day activity of our sales force, and the ones that are strategic, which are basically directed sometimes in a centralized way, which are promotion spend, pricing strategies. And the way those combine gives us a better idea of also what to expect for the remainder of the year. And as I told Lauren, we're optimistic about the rest of the year, but we're not, you know, prepared to revise our guidance at this point. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
And I will turn it to Emilio for the second part of your question.
Thank you for the question. Yes, we had a very strong last quarter. I mean, the last quarter of last year, very strong, as well as the first quarter. Volumes are really good, as Arturo already mentioned. The RGM strategies are having very good results. Synergies are on the way. So margin should be in the neighborhood of 20s, maybe 18 to 20s. So we'd rather be conservative on that way because last two quarters were really, really good. So it should be around 18 to 20% margin
Thank you. If I'm allowed, just one final comment regarding the U.S. refranchising. Are you guys would be interested in investing territories more in the East Coast, or the strategy would be to be the with the territories that are close to Mexico?
Yeah, what we've been saying is that it makes complete sense to us to be interested in territories that are adjacent to our own. I think those are the ones that not only we would have synergies due to the proximity of our territories, but also that are similar to the markets in we operate, where we know customers really well, where we have been operating for more than 20 years, and which have a market structure that we're more familiar with. So those are the ones that we would be basically interested in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Savannah.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Benjamin Thurer with Barclays.
Hey, good morning, Arturo. Good morning, Emilio. Just a quick question more on the mix, what we've been seeing in Mexico trend-wise from returnables to non-returnables. It seems like there was that nice trend until about a year ago where returnables were gaining some of the share, and now we've seen that basically since third quarter of last year, there was a shift and back to non-returnables, and especially this quarter, there was a huge difference between returnables and non-returnables in switch of share. Can you shed a little bit of light on that, if you think this is going to be a more sustainable level where we are here, and how that actually impacted your profitability in the quarter in the North American operations? Thanks.
Yeah, certainly, Benjamin. Thank you for your question. Yeah, that's what's been happening. The volume of products in non-returnable packages has increased more. And I would say that this is a reflection of the situation in the market and the economic conditions. The convenience of the returnable packages is paid by consumers when the situation is more favorable. It's not necessarily better for us to have sales of returnable or non-returnable. They're both very profitable for the company. So what we want to have is a healthy mix and the flexibility of packages so that the consumer can select which is best for, you know, his particular condition. So what we've seen in situations in which we've had more challenging economic conditions, like we've seen even in Argentina, the returnables start to grow more, and that's happened in Mexico in the past, even after the tax here was imposed and those years. Now that, you know, the environment is improved, you see people consuming more of the non-returnable packages. So I think we're in the best position with a, you know, flexible price pack structure to take advantage of either situation, but it does not relate to the overall profitability of our company. We have very good margins and profitability on either type of package.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Benjamin.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Andrea Tejera with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, good morning for you guys there, and thanks for taking the question and congratulations on the results. I just want to explore a little bit more, a little bit Arturo and Emilio on the cost side. I was wondering, you mentioned several times and also in the press release about the hedges. So I was wondering how we should look into the rest of 2016. In terms of the hedges and how much that helped you through the quarter, if you can attribute it to the gains on the cost side from the hedges. And a second question is related to market share. I think the brand preference for brand Coca-Cola is quite evident. And I was wondering if you can share with us, how that market share has evolved, because I know from the second half of last year, you've had, already a very good performance. So if you can share with us, how the market share has evolved in the last 12 months, so we can kind of expect, and I know it's a moving target because they have been putting more execution efforts on the vending machines and coolers and all of that, but I just wonder if how much momentum you're going to have until the end of the year. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. I'll address the second part, and then I'll let Emilio answer the first question. With respect to market share, yes, we've had a very positive trend. We've been recovering share, volume share, not only in sparkling but also in the NARTD in this start of the year. So we're going back to the levels that we had, which are, you know, very good historically, and we're growing also our value share, which is very important. We're growing our transactions, which is another metric that we follow. What we do is obviously try to strike a balance between our profitability, our growth, and the volume share that we have. We know that part of this is the result of the market growing. We're taking a bigger share of that growth under better conditions, as always happens with our brands that have a stronger equity. But we're also growing share in all of the categories that we participate in, all the major categories. We're growing share in water. We're growing share in juices. We're growing share in sports drinks. We're growing share in sparkling water category with the launch of Topo Chico. We're growing share with innovation. You've seen this Limón y Nada, Naranja y Nada product that we launched. This is a new category of sparkling and already has a relevant part of the mix, close to, 0.4 of the mix. All of that is source of growth that obviously translates into a better market share and volume share. So we're comfortable with the trend, and we have to maintain, obviously, that balance. The most important thing about the positive trend in market share is that it's been attained with more profitability. So if we're able to do that, I think we're in the best shape. We do have to take into account the competition closed the price gaps, as I mentioned before. Pressure by margin for whatever reason, but they closed the gaps that we had during this quarter. And again, although we still maintain price gaps with competitors, the strength of our brands allows us to gain a bigger size of the pie in those circumstances. So we continue to roll out our plans from the ACT model, and many of those translate into basically more transactions and more value share in the market, which is our key metric. I will turn it to Emilio, if that's okay with you.
Just curious if you're only going to really cycle tough comparisons on the market share really on the first quarter of next year, I'm assuming, because as you said, this process has been evolving even stronger in the first quarter, right?
That's right.
Okay, that's right. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for your question, Andrea. Regarding your question, hedging, first we have hedged an additional $130 million in Peru for the debt in Peru. That's one of the hedges that we already closed. The hedging regarding raw materials, we have, as we mentioned last quarter, we have hedged 100% of our needs of high fructose prices for this year at the similar U.S. prices as last year. So we won't have any increase in high fructose prices in U.S. dollars. Regarding the hedges for our peso dollar for our needs in dollars in Mexico, we have hedged for the second quarter a little bit more than half of our needs just for the second quarter. We have seen an appreciation of the Mexican peso, as you're aware. So we're looking for the best window to hedge the rest of the year and the rest of our needs. So as of today, we only have part of the needs for the next quarter, for the second quarter.
Mm-hmm. No, great. And then you had 100% in the first quarter, right? Historically, you were fully covering this past first quarter.
Yeah, the last quarter we have hedged. That's why also there's is reflected on the cost of sales on our margin.
And one last question, if I may, on more like longer term. Like, I understand, the comments that Arturo made on the refranchising of the U.S., and you've been very vocal about it. but I was wondering if that could preclude, a bigger move into South America. What is your mind in terms of, like, your preference or your focus in terms of M&A?
Yes. What we've said is that we have certain regions that we would be willing to go into as a Coca-Cola franchise. Of course, we have a clear picture of where we want to be, and we also know the model in which we can create value. We would like any project that we get into in North America not to preclude other possibilities, of course. But it all depends. But we would think that it does not, and that our priorities are set to opportunities in general in the Americas, in the beverage segments, and also in the fast-moving consumer products industry. So we definitely see ourselves as consolidators. We have a proven track record, a successful track record, and we will continue to look for opportunities to expand growth in the continent. And I think there might be some either in the south or in the north.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Congrats again.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Antonio Gonzalez with Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, Emilio and Arturo. Congratulations on the results. I got just two quick questions. First, a follow-up on the hedging comment that you just did, Emilio. I was wondering if you can give us more color on the balance sheet side. What exactly did you hedge in Peru, and can you let us know what your all-in dollar exposure today, both Peru and Ecuador? Is there more to come in terms of hedging in the following quarters? And then just secondly, very quick, in terms of milk in Mexico, you mentioned obviously in the press release the net addition in terms of coolers that you did throughout the quarter. Do you have a target of where you would like to get in terms of percentage penetration of coolers, and when do you think you get there? Thanks.
Okay, I'll address the second part, if I may, Antonio. Thanks for your question. With respect to our cooler strategy in Mexico, I think when we talk about cooler coverage, which is very high in Mexico, and we continue to expand, probably that's not the most appropriate metric once you get to a certain level. We might say that, target is not 100%, because there might be customers where it's not, doesn't make a sense from a business standpoint to have a cooler. But certainly the question is, how many doors would you have in each of the customers? So what we're doing now is have a better segmentation of the market to understand what is the optimal number of doors per customer, rather than the optimal reach in terms of cooler coverage. So especially in the case of milk, as you say, because most of the Santa Clara coolers that we're introducing do not increase our overall cooler coverage. Mostly they are part of an additional door that's been introduced to the larger customers. So I would say that once we segment and have the larger customers, which would be the most appropriate for increasing the number of categories and the number of doors, those are the ones we address first with this additional doors. But it's not only for milk that we're doing that. We're increasing the number of doors for all of our categories. And sometimes we are using, our own coolers for Santa Clara. We have some special coolers, but it is an overall strategy. And the metric that we're following right now is the percentage of large and extra large customers that have four or more doors of refrigerators in the store. So that is the one that continues to increase, and the target should be close to the overall cooler coverage of more than 50%. But it's mostly that's the way it works, rather than just reach in relation to the total customers.
And what's the coverage today of milk? Are you? I would presume you're still ramping up that coverage in terms of milk, typically, right?
Yes. It's still low as compared, to our overall market. So there's a huge potential to continue to grow with milk. And again, not necessarily we need the cooler. It does help, but we are leveraging our cooler infrastructure for milk. We have close to 40% of the target market for Santa Clara that we have covered right now.
That's very clear. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks,
hello, Antonio. Thank you for your question. First, this first quarter, we reduced U.S. debt by $530 million in Mexico. In Peru, as I said, we have a debt of $580 million. We had a hedge of $100 million, and we closed an additional hedge of $130 million this first quarter. And as you may know, we also launched a tender offer to repurchase up to $150 million debt of our both two bonds that we have in Peru. So at the end, in Peru, we will have a debt of $430 million, but only an exposure of $200 million. Because of the two hedges of 100 and 130. That's talking about Peru. In Mexico, as I said, we reduced already 530, which was part of the plan that I mentioned last quarter. I mentioned a plan of 600 million. So as of today, we have reduced 530. We're planning to reduce the $230 million that we still have in Mexico in the next month by issuing new debt in Mexican pesos. So at the end, we will have zero U.S. dollar debt in Mexico in a few months.
All right. And in Ecuador, there's some debt as well, right, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes. Yes, but we're not considering that because we have the inflows in dollars, so it's the same currency.
All right, and just a final thing, if I may, with these, M&A debate that you've been addressing today, just from a financial standpoint, Emilio, what do you think is the leverage threshold that you would feel comfortable with? What's the max debt? What's max debt capacity that ARCA could have?
Well, again, we have 1.3 right now. We will expect to have by the end of the year around 1.1. But we could go up to 2 with I think it's a very comfortable number, 2 times net debt to EBITDA. And that would be, I think, a good number and enough to reach a good opportunity, M&A opportunity.
All right. Thank you so much, and congrats.
Thank you.
Thank you, Antonio.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jose Jordan with Deutsche Bank.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. I just had one last question. My others were answered. This swap that you're doing for the minorities in Ecuador, is that something that you – is that an idea that you might extend to the Coca-Cola company to exchange their 38 and change stake in Lindley for shares of ARCA Contal in the near future or even in the medium term so that you could just consolidate everything 100% and have all the stakeholders at the Monterrey level?
Hello, Jose. Good to talk to you. Well, yeah, certainly that is something that would be desirable. We are not planning to do that at this point right now. It requires to align a number of things. It would be something that would make sense for the future, but it's not in the current plans to do. I don't know if maybe you want to comment further on that.
Yes, well, that's something that Co has to propose, but at this moment we don't see any intention to move their stake from Peru right now.
Well, we have the flexibility to do that at some point if when the time comes. It certainly would be. Convenient for the operation in general, no doubt.
Right. No, very clear. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jose.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lucas Epicia with Goldman Sachs.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. Congratulations as well on the results. I wanted to follow up on the consolidation debate, especially when it comes to Latin America. I wanted to ask specifically, given the opportunities that are left and your preferences in terms of territories and operating single geographies rather than fragmented ones, where would you see the appeal in Coca-Cola Andina specifically as compared to other operators? And with that in mind, for instance, you've made clear in the past that you didn't want to enter Brazil. How would you relate to that? For instance, would you consider asset swaps? Would you for instance, consider an asset in its part rather than in their whole. So that's more a specific question. Even seeing what you're doing in Argentina. Argentina is a market where I assume for a long time it was fair to keep things on freeze. Now with more optimism, I think the current structure maybe is not as rational as it could be with the four bottlers in a market that could get better. So that's my question, specifically on Andina and how would think about stepping in into territories where you didn't want to operate until now. Thank you.
Thank you, Luca. Well, what we can say is that, it's hard to say that we're going to go into a certain territory. I mean, probably what we can tell you at this point is that might be territories that we would not consider and others that we would consider. But, to define our interest in a particular project in a certain region, it requires to align many things. It's not only our own interest of being there, but it's obviously the conditions in which we could have either, some kind of alliance or an acquisition or whatever kind of deal, and that we are confident that based on the terms of the deal, we can have the synergies and create value once we get in. I think we've proven that we are very prudent in that regard, that we want to make sure that the project is creating value for our stakeholders. And what we've said is that we would not consider going outside the Americas at this point. Once we talk about Latin America, it's, as I tell you, we're open to analyze, but it requires, many factors, and not only the region or how the market is right now. It requires basically the possibility of having a deal, which, as you know, in M&A requires aligning many things. So it's hard to comment on that at this point. And with respect to North America, we've been clear also about where we would be interested in. So I think we will maintain our strategy of, being close to the other bottlers and seeing where we can combine if that is possible, or enter into a project that will create value for everyone. But it's hard to say that it's going to be in a specific bottler or country at this point.
Yeah. But your message, I think, today, or your comment today also imply that, the sequence of events doesn't necessarily, limit what you could or you may not do. I think there was a question earlier asking about, if you do get Texas or the U.S., does this mean, for a while you won't be able to do anything in South America? But my understanding from your answer was that, this is not necessarily the right way of thinking. It really depends on what the opportunities comes up. Is that fair?
Exactly. That's exactly what I try to convey to you.
And just as a final comment on this, assuming that consolidation continues, you participate in the U.S. refranchise, I guess you become an even stronger and more important partner for Coca-Cola. Now, the equity participation of Coca-Cola in Arca Continental is somewhat lower what we've seen they have in some of the other larger consolidator, even following the merger in Europe. Is that something that also gives you some flexibility, going back to the previous question about leverage, about financial strength that you may have to pursue bigger opportunities? Is that something we should be considering to the question as well?
Yes, as you know, Coke has a little bit less than 9% stake in Arca Continental. We always we have the flexibility to find the right structure for both. So that could be also an option to analyze and to consider if that's the model that suits for both.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Luca.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have no further questions in the queue. I would like to turn today's conference call back over to Arturo Gutierrez for closing remarks.
Thank you. And thank all for your continued interest in our company, in Arca Continental. Please do not hesitate to contact our investor relations team for any further questions. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.